Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the first Leeds United podcast of 2024. Happy New Year, Bridgie. How are you, mate?
All the best to you, mate, for 2024. I've had an absolutely fantastic Christmas and New Year, mate. Thank you, and yourself?
Yeah. It's been pretty hectic, to be honest. Obviously, I was in the UK for a long time, and then my wife came over, and we spent Christmas and New Year in England. We're finally back in Florida now, but it's all been a bit of a whirlwind. I mean, I think I was kind of drunk for most of it, and
I was just about to say, I do believe I saw you on the television, mate, cheering on Mr. Humphreys after you did the podcast with him.
Yes, yeah. So new world number one and PDC world champion Luke Humphreys, big Leeds fan.
Talk to us. Was it good?
Oh, it was amazing. If you haven't heard the show with him that we did a couple of weeks ago, you should definitely listen to it. The man's brilliant, very cerebral, very interesting. But it was unreal. We went to the quarterfinal just because he'd very kindly offered, and my wife and I were in London for a wedding, and so I said, "Yep, we'd love to come along." And we went down for the quarters, and he ended up getting his best average of the tournament so far. At that point, he got over 100 for the first time, and so he said, "Oh, well, you've got to come back tomorrow." So I didn't know how superstitious he was, but he wanted us to come back. So we left my wife's cousin's birthday early. Sorry, Amber, so that we could go to the semi-final. He did even better in the semi-final, got an even better average. So he was like, "Well, you're on the journey now. You have to come for the final." And so who am I? Who am I to tempt fate? Who am I to anger the superstition gods? So I moved my train. We booked an extra night in the hotel and we went to the final as well. And I think we all know what happened there. It was an incredible win, incredible performance.
Yeah, I saw you celebrating, but then all of a sudden, you look very bleary-eyed at one point, so I think you'd kicked on, had you?
Yeah, just a bit. obviously, it's the darts, you know, how it goes. It was our third night in a row. And, you know, we were just toasting a wonderful victory for a superb bloke and a big Leeds fan in Luke Humphreys. That was all it was. We had a great night. So congratulations to Luke, and thank you very much for having us, mate. His whole family are amazing, by the way. Obviously, his dad, who named him Luke, Leeds United Kings of Europe. We confirmed that with him. It is absolutely true. The whole family were really lovely. So thanks for having us, Luke, and congratulations.
Is that where that comes from? That is outstanding.
Yeah. And my dog's called Luke after Luke Skywalker, and his dad was like, "Not anymore. Leeds United Kings of Europe now." So that's what I'm going to have to tell everyone. That's what my dog's named after, which I'm not sure my wife's happy about that, but there we go. Nah. How was your Christmas, mate? What did you get up to?
I've just done my first gym session today because I've overindulged. And I always say that I need some structure in my life once again, because I've kind of just, I've let the festive period take control, mate. And not happy. And when you're getting a gym membership off your wife for Christmas, you know, there's a problem, pal. So
Oh, wow.
Hint. I've gone and used that today, so I'm feeling very dehydrated.
Because it's January 10th and I'm supposed to have been back in the gym, and I haven't even texted my trainer, I haven't texted anyone that I go with. I'm kind of hoping that they don't even know I'm back yet. We'll see. I need to get in the gym desperately, because I did the same as you. I was working for like 2-3 months prior, so I was like on a really strict diet and whatever. And so when Christmas came around and I finished work, I just went hell for leather. I've just like not stopped eating.
And when there's that much football on as well, do you know what I mean? Sitting I've been doing other games. I've been doing the Leeds United games, traveling around the country as well. So just sitting in the car. But I'll tell you what, the football's been unbelievable. And that FA Cup game, mate, please talk to me about Paddy Bamford's goal.
Well, I mean, so I texted him a couple of days ago. And it's funny, I wasn't actually going to say anything to him, because as I said to him, we all know that he's got that in his locker. Like, we've seen him in training when he's done it, when Bielsa came and gave him that hug. And we've seen some of the great goals he scored previously. So we know he's got it. So I didn't want to make a big thing of it. It was just like, oh, you know, Pat's just scored another wonder goal. But the more I've watched it and the different angles I've seen, it is just genuinely one of the best goals I've ever seen. I had to say to him, mate, that is unreal. That is absolutely unreal.
Outrageous. Do you know what it is? There was an image of Archie Gray going up to him, and he was just celebrating with him, but he just looked at him like he was God or somebody, you know, nothing had happened. His mouth was wide open and he was just looking up at like this shrine. Unbelievable finish, mate. I mean, the technique to even the chest, I know exactly what he's trying to do, Patty, but the instinct and the mindset to think about that split second decision, right, to think, you know what it is, I'm going to hit this. And the technique, the way it came off his laces, absolutely outrageous. I mean, I've scored, Matt, I've scored some good goals, right? I don't mind saying that. I'm not a big head. I've scored some crackers. That was up there with one of the best I've ever seen. And they were talking about the overhead kick from the, you know, Garnacho from the scum. I think Patty's is even better, mate. It's the technique and the thought process, unbelievable.
Yeah. So Pat said to me, and I hope he won't mind me saying this, he went, I tested it down and I just thought, fuck it. And so he hits it, yeah. Which obviously, I mean, I suppose there's a degree of that, but I mean, it's not as simple as that, is it, Bridgie? I mean, as a striker, tell us, like, the technique. I mean, he's jumped 2-3 foot in the air just to chest the ball down for a start. I mean, that's incredible, isn't it? To then be able to land, turn, and get that kind of strike on it.
I mean, if you're looking at something, if you go and have a look, there was a goal scored by Rivaldo for Barcelona. It was classed as the $50 million. Dollar or million pound goal when he scored the winner to make it 3-2 for Barcelona. He chests it from the edge of the box and then does a scissor kick. That's probably the greatest goal I've ever seen. Patty's in mid-flight to take the chest, so he's still like, he's got to chest it while he's jumping, which the technique of that is hard enough to do. And then I'm thinking he's going to take a touch and have a go, but actually to land first and then be able to get the power without any backlift, it was just a special moment. So I think that was a great result. And then we go marching on in the FA Cup to the next round.
And that's surely got to give, I mean, obviously the team 3-0 clean sheet, but for Pat's confidence, 2-2 and a goal like that, I mean, surely that's, I mean, what would that do for you as a striker who's not had the best time of it of late? That's got to be totally buoyant right now.
It always seems to happen. I mean, I've seen there's players go through barren spells and you can't, no matter what you try and do, you can't get that goal that you need. And then when you get the one, you seem to find that, you know, it just settles the nerves, the confidence comes back and you get that instinct back. And for Daniel Farker to make the change and put Routier in that number 10 position and play Patty, I think it's done the world of good because he needed that goal. And then again, he's backed it up with that goal against Peterborough. So, goal at Birmingham, sorry. When he got that one and then he got the goal against Posh, absolutely fantastic. So, mate, buzzing for him. I think that'll set him up very, very nicely for the remainder of this season and perfect timing because, again, it's competition for places. So, I'm so happy for Patty.
Well, obviously, incredible goal and you know, three goals and Perdue scoring a brace as well. We can't ignore that. But obviously, that can't happen unless we have a foundation at the back. And that is my little segue into today's guest, because obviously we've had a bit of a tough time of it in the goalkeeper position the last couple of weeks, obviously with Ilan's suspension and then Darlow's injury. So cometh the hour, cometh the man. We have very thankfully had a very able substitute in our next guest. Should we get him on?
Let's do it. I can't wait to talk to him because I want to see how he's kept himself going, mate. With the not thinking he was probably going to get any game time this season and then actually be there and doing it and be in the mindset to get two clean sheets. I'm looking forward to chatting with him.
I'm very much looking forward to it as well. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Christopher Clarkson. How are you?
I'm all good. All good.
He's just finished training.
Am I right in saying you've just got in? You just got into Thorpe Arch?
Yeah, just got in today. I had a day off yesterday, so played a bit of golf and then tried to relax a bit.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm sure Bridgie's going to be asking about the golf in a minute.
Well, I'm going to ask you straight away. What's your handicap?
I play off 13.5 now. But then I haven't played in a couple of months. So
that's about 10 then, really. That's impressive.
I wasn't expecting the best yesterday, but it went decent, to be fair. It went all right. A bit cold, but
I'm surprised you can get on with the weather. I haven't played in a couple of months, so I'm looking forward to getting out again tomorrow. But I'll see if we can get a game in next time I'm down that way.
Sounds perfect.
I'm fascinated how you do it because, you know, I live in Florida where it's pretty much always nice weather and it's sunshine and warm. I can't play golf in the weather that we've got in England right now. I mean, what was it, like 2 degrees or something? What, were you not freezing?
4 or 5 yesterday. So I had my snood on, my hat on, my mittens, everything. So I was just, didn't care how I played. I was just, I'm not going to freeze and try to enjoy myself. But it went all right, so can't really complain.
Matt, the hardest thing is keeping the hands warm. If the hands go cold when you're playing golf, it's game over, mate. So that's the biggest challenge.
Right. That was horrible.
But I'll be down. I'm playing off 8 at the moment, so I'll come and take your money off you, Chris.
Sounds good, Dan.
Well, let's switch from golf to football, if you don't mind. I mean,
all right.
Yeah, do you mind? Is that all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
How's it been? how's it been getting some game time, mate? I mean, you know, two clean sheets. That must be feel pretty great right now.
Yeah, it was. Don't really have words. I've been here for 2.5 years now, and I had 35 minutes against Wolves. That was the last time I played like competitive first team football. So coming out on Elland Road and then winning 3-0 was amazing. It was incredible, to be fair.
Chris, we've talked a couple of times on these podcasts, me and Matt, and I've also, you know, had a chat with some of the fans on LUTV about what it's like for players that are sitting on the outer when you're waiting for game time. Now, being a goalkeeper, obviously, you've got like 1, 2, 3, sometimes 4 goalkeepers at a club. It's something that's always fascinated me. But I always say, you know, you've got to be ready for that opportunity because you never know when it's going to come. So how have you kept yourself going in shape waiting for this moment? Because obviously, with the 2 clean sheets, it tells me that you've been doing the right things and you haven't just basically, you know, tossed it off and thought, oh, I'm not going to get a chance this season when Darlow came in. You've actually been focused. So how have you managed that, mate?
Of course, it can be hard, especially as a goalie. And I came in, summer 21, and I was straight on the bench. And then first year and a half, I was on the bench. So then it's like, you basically just prepare as you're going to play every single weekend. And then now it's been more like, even though I know I always need to be ready, you try to concentrate a bit more on yourself and on your own body. Like, of course, it can be hard because you don't have any games to like prepare properly for. But then it can happen as quick as this. Elan gets a red card and then Carl dislocates his thumb in 5-6 days and then suddenly you're playing. So right. You kind of always have to be ready.
You had nothing to do with that dislocation, mind, did you?
No, I blame Ed for that one. Ed was the one that was shooting in the warm-up. Okay. So.
Oh, right, okay.
I've read some funny comments on Twitter, but no, I don't have anything to do with it, no.
Yeah. you've got to feel
still a good camaraderie.
A little unlucky for, feel a bit bad for Carl, obviously. He's waited for his chance to get in, finally gets it and then dislocates his thumb. But ultimately, you know, that's your opportunity to shine. Is there a tremendous amount of pressure that comes with that? I mean, were you expecting to be playing this far through the season, this early, I suppose, in the season? Was it quite a shock, or were you confident enough in the way you've been training that you were going to get a chance?
I'm not going to lie, like, you never, as a third choice goalkeeper, you don't expect to play. Like, you got Elan, that's a brilliant goalkeeper in front of you, and then Carl as well. He's an amazing goalkeeper, so like, you're just trying to work towards like being at their level and like pushing them every day, and then you just gotta keep working hard, really. It can be hard because you're not expected to play, you're just gonna train, and you might get a 23 games here and there, but then, to be honest, no, I didn't expect to play any first team football this season, to be fair. So it came as a shock, but then when it comes, you just have to grab it with both hands, probably, and then, yeah, it went as it went.
Well, that's exactly what you've been doing. You've been grabbing the ball with both hands. I mean, there's a couple of saves. Because I was watching your face, there was a couple of saves that you've made in the games that we've played where there was a slight deflection and you save one with your legs and you kind of looked in your face. Your face told such a story. It was one of them reaction. You already committed to a save, but then you realise you had to adjust. On a striker, we need a confidence booster like Patty Bamford at the moment, scoring his 2 goals to get him his confidence. There was a couple of saves that you needed to make. Like, I could just see that you just grew in stature in that first game against Birmingham.
Yeah, came in the Birmingham game. Of course, I was nervous. Like, it would have been weird if I wasn't nervous. But then, after the first 10 minutes, I felt confident. And then you just try to keep going from there. And then the first shot Birmingham had on goal, it came off Koops' leg, I think. And then I just looked back at him like,
that's the one.
That was close, wasn't it? Like, I was almost on. It was looking like he was going to shoot down to my right, and then it kind of deflected a bit to the left, and I was like, a bit lucky, but you got to be lucky sometimes.
Well, I don't know if it was lucky. I think the anticipation was there. I mean, I'm fascinated by that because we've spoken to Ilan about this and Carl actually, the idea that obviously in this Leeds team this year we have a lot of possession, and the goalkeeper's not called on maybe as much as in previous seasons. So for you coming into that game, obviously as you said, third choice, a lot of pressure, a lot of nerves. I mean, just how buoyant do you feel after making that first save? Are you the whole time hoping the ball stays away, or are you just desperate for that first touch so you can get comfortable?
No, I think I wasn't scared to get the ball, or like you're not scared to be involved. So, of course, it helps to get a first save and not like trying having to pick the ball out of the net after the first strike. But
yeah,
like you just try to stay composed and then try to do the best for the team.
Well, I've got a, you've given the manager a selection headache, Chris, because obviously the two clean sheets, you've done exactly what was expected or you wanted to, you know, and the team and all us fans. I love putting pressure on Matt in these podcasts, right? Because he thinks he's got a bit of a coaching background.
No, I don't.
And I've tested him a few times. So here you go, Matt. Matt, this one's for you, lad. Let's just say Chris keeps another clean sheet, fingers crossed, against Cardiff, right? And you've got a selection dilemma. You get Ilan back and Carl back. What are you doing selection-wise, mate? You're the gaffer now.
Oh, mate. This is exactly why I'm not a manager. I mean, it's difficult to say,
but that's the job.
It?
Chris has done his job because he's given the gaffer and he hasn't given the gaffer an easy option now. So this is why it's very the tough decisions.
It's the best headache you can have because ultimately, you know, we've been in a situation where Ilan's the number one. And we aren't 100% sure if we're going to be able to cope fully without him. So the best thing that's happened is that actually we've discovered absolutely we're in safe hands with Christopher here. And do you change your winning team? And it's very difficult to ask that question, obviously, as we've established, Ilan's the number one. But if you're making the clean sheets right now, it's very difficult to call it. I was going to ask you a question. What do you I mean, I don't know if you're aware of what's happening at Cardiff yet or not. And if you are, we don't need to have any insight. But what do you expect to happen? I'm acutely aware this is me dodging the question.
I was just about to say you're going to be a perfect manager or a politician because you dodge that so well.
By your own admission, you're the third choice keeper. Obviously, you're the second choice right now with Carl's injury. But you have been playing very, very well, what do you expect to happen? Do you expect Ilan to come straight back in, or do you think that you'll be given a chance?
No, that's how it is. As life of a second or third choice goalkeeper, like Ilan's the first choice, and that's what the manager's chosen. So he's been playing very well all season, and then he had a red card that probably shouldn't be a red card, and then he's back against Cardiff now. So it's a difficult question, but the obvious answer is Ilan's going to play because he's the first choice. So I'm not the one choosing the team, but that's my logic behind it. And then like now the times the second or third has to step up, they kind of just have to grab the opportunity and then hope for a new one.
And the psychology behind that, like when you came to the club, like you have to just accept that. I mean, no matter how well you've played in the last couple of games, you just accept that that's the pecking order. You aren't the number one for now. And that's just how it is. That's the thing that you have to live with.
Yeah, of course, as a footballer, like you want to play as much as possible, but you kind of have to put the team in front of yourself sometimes as well. And then if that's what the manager wants, that's, you got to live with it and then just train harder the next time.
I was in a very similar situation. I was at Leeds in 1999-2000 and had an unbelievable season. 19 goals, thought, yes, I'm number one. And then we signed this guy called Mark Viduka and I watched him train for 3 weeks and I realised I was going to be number two for the rest of the season because this guy was so good and you just got to accept it. I was up for the challenge, but obviously, you know that, it's a similar situation, but not. I think there's a lot more competition for places with for the goalkeepers, but they understand because they're training together every single day. Then this is the psych that I've never been able to understand from the goalkeepers union, as I call it, Chris. Like you all seem to be and understand that role, whereas I see a lot of outfield players, some lads that are in the same position won't ever speak to each other because they know the competition. They're like, I'm up for it. So yeah, I respect you, man.
Thank you.
I think it's really impressive, like just to echo what Bridgie was saying there, because it would be so easy for you or anyone in your or your position to sort of get the ump about it and say, well, hang on a minute, I've been playing really well here. I want to get some game time. But there is a unique situation in goalkeepers. Like, you have to have a certain mentality. And I just, and like you said there about the team being first, and I just think that's so impressive to still have that kind of outlook. What is your relationship like with Ilan and Carl? Do you guys get on a lot? Do you hang around together?
Yeah, it's very good, to be fair. Like, it's how I feel like it should be. Like, it's, we're all friends and we usually don't argue. We can argue about stuff at training, but then it's all good after and we're all friends. So we push each other each day and then...
Do you socialise away from the training ground with Carl and Millie?
Yeah, sometimes we do, but it can be hard as well. I live by myself, so I have all the time in the world, but then they got their families and kids, and or Carl got kids, so... It is what it is sometimes. Like, it's not always that you get time off the pitch, but then we spend so much time together here as well. So it's probably good to have some time away from each other sometimes as well.
Well, let's say if you all went out for a pizza, who's the tight ass that doesn't pay if all three of you went for a pizza?
No, I think we usually, how do you say it? We argue about who is going to pay and not who is not going to pay. It's usually nobody that's tight like that.
I hope you don't mind me asking this, but it's interesting to me, as I suppose it's a bit like an understudy in acting or whatever. And this is kind of the question, same to Bridgie, but it's really about the goalkeeping mindset. Obviously, they're friends of yours and teammates. When Ilan got suspended and obviously Carl injured himself, like, you're not going to be happy about it. But there must be a certain degree of sort of like, while you one hand you sort of patting him on the back saying, I'm sorry to hear that, mate. And on the other hand, you're going, yes, I'm in now. Like, how is it kind of like balancing those emotions?
He has me appearance fee coming.
No, you don't, how do you say it? You don't get happy when somebody got injured. Like, it's a teammate and it's a friend. So you're more like, that's... football sometimes, like, you never know what's behind the next corner. And then I went from being third choice to being second choice one game, and then suddenly I was playing. So it's all like, you just got to be ready, don't you?
When you got that call saying that Carl's injured his thumb, you're actually going to be playing, so you've gone from being third choice to first choice almost overnight. Does your preparation change, or are you always in that mindset that you could be playing no matter what?
Oh, you've got to be.
No, of course it changed a little bit. Like, when you're third, you don't prepare 100% as if you're playing. You train well and stuff, but you probably go a bit more to the gym. You don't, like, you push yourself a bit more, but then when you know you're on the bench or you're playing, you kind of prepare like a bit different and try to feel as fresh as you can on the weekend.
Speaking of that, you've actually looked like you've bulked up. You look like you've bulked up a lot. Have you been doing a lot of more physical stuff in the gym?
Yeah, I've been trying. Like,
no, I mean bulked up. I've bulked up in a different way over Christmas, Christopher. I've bulked up down here with all the food and that, mate. But you look like you've... When I say bulked up, I mean that in the most professional manner.
Yeah, I felt when I came, especially when I came, yeah, 2.5 years ago, I came as... like, I don't know what you call it in English, but probably a bit like skinny fat. Yeah. I was not fat, but I was not like skinny, but I was not a lot of muscles, probably a bit too much fat.
Carrying a bit of timber, we call it.
Yeah. And then I've just been trying to eat good and train well in the gym. And we have a brilliant like physical staff that helps us with whatever we need there. So it's been... yeah, I've tried to put on some muscle and probably lose some fat. That's about it.
And obviously, as a professional athlete, I'm sure it's not as difficult as it is for us mere mortals. But obviously, being third choice, thinking, well, I'm probably not going to be playing anytime soon. Does that come with a level of difficulty to maintain that level of professionalism, to constantly be trying to get fitter and be at peak physical condition when you're like, I mean, I'm not even going to play. Like, is that difficult? Do you have to keep on top of yourself with that?
Yeah, it's probably harder to, like, keep your body in shape when you're a third choice compared to, like, starting goalkeeper, because then you don't have any games to look forward to. You don't, like, prepare for games, but it can be hard sometimes. The time I've been there, I've had it tough. Like, that's just how football is. It goes up and down, but like, You just have to have your mindset, like, you always have to be ready, you always have to keep on top of your body.
Is there someone at the club, or maybe like a, I don't know if you use a sports psychologist or someone that kind of helps you with that, or is that just a thing that you just work through on your own?
No, the club is brilliant, like, whoever it is, from groundsman to the boss, you can speak to anyone that's here about anything, and then they will listen and give you advice, and you can go to, yeah, anyone, and they will help you if you ask for help. So it's just, that's about it. It's a brilliant club and everyone's here to help each other.
That's nice to hear that.
There's a thing that you struggled with a bit, Bridgie, wasn't it? You know, when you were coming back from injury and whatnot, it was a thing that was kind of difficult to maintain that peak fitness when you know that you're not playing.
Yeah, and we didn't have that kind of psychology behind it neither when I was coming back. It was the physical side I didn't have an issue with. It was the mental side that I struggled with to get back from. And I didn't know, like I've said to you in the past, Matt, I didn't know where I was going or what it was that was happening to us. Until obviously Dave Hancock asked and got his help to sort us out. So that was never an offer. I think obviously things have changed now. And obviously with Christopher saying that he can go and speak to the groundsman, I would never go and sport in the groundsman because I was used to go and trash his car every other week just to wind him up and hide his vehicles. So he used to hate me, to be fair. I was just a prankster with the ground staff. So, Christopher, I've got to go and ask a couple of lads that I played with at Leeds United, Eric Bakker and Alfie Haaland. You're following in an illustrious lineup of Norwegian players that have played for Leeds. So before you joined, how much did you know about Leeds previously?
I'm not going to lie. I didn't know like a lot. I knew it was a massive club and we've had some great Norwegian players being here. And the fan base we have in Norway for Leeds is massive. So that's about it. And I've learned more and more over the years.
When we played that certain team over there in Oslo, in pre-season, there was a team that we played. We're not going to mention their name, but I was trying to get an interview with yourself after the game and I couldn't get hold of him, Matt, because he was there with his family. There was all these fans and obviously the following over there is absolutely huge. So have they embraced you because obviously you're wearing the Leeds colours?
Yeah, I got a lot of supporters from my old club as well that support Leeds. So that's like, they were over the moon when I went here. And usually you just get good stuff from everyone back home about Leeds and nobody really has anything bad to say about Leeds.
I obviously hugely passionate fan base in Norway for football. But for coming out for that first game at Birmingham at Elland Road, and you've got the fans sounded like they were in very, very good voice. What's that like? I mean, obviously you've got the pressure already of starting this game. Did that crowd put more pressure on you or did that lift you up having all the Leeds fans there?
No, I think it helped. Like, of course, when you come out the first time when we walk out, you look a bit around and you're like, this is sick, like it's amazing. And then I was probably a bit lucky we played under floodlights as well, because then it kind of like the fans doesn't disappear, they're still very, very loud, but you can't like see every single person, so
sure,
that probably helped a bit as well. But it's just when you go out and like the ref blows the game, it's, you kind of just forget, and then everything is just on how we play and try to perform as good as possible.
I think everybody was talking about for me in the last, that was going around, because back in the day, 99-2000, I've said it before, I went and I was having a good season, I got a bit of confidence and I went and dyed my hair. Now, I know that yourself and somebody else, Patty Bamford, who are both flying the last couple of matches, I might have to bring these golden locks back. Are you there? Is that the same hairdressers or something? Because it seems to be bringing everybody luck.
No, we go to different hairdressers. Twitter's flowing about it, isn't it? And I find it funny. Like, I've probably
it's
been
trending.
Yeah.
I like the idea that you did each other's hair. You had like a sleepover and you both did each other's.
Would have been a good story if that was the truth. But yeah.
I've actually got a bone to pick with Pat about that.
What you got?
Well, so I was going to do it last year. that same hairstyle, and then bloody Beckham did it. So I thought, well, I can't do it now because everyone's going to think I've just copied Beckham. And then I've just been working for the past few months, and I thought, right, when I get back to Florida, I'm going to do it because the Beckham thing was over a year ago now. It's going to be fine. I've told my hairdresser I'm going to get it done. And then who walks out on the pitch with it? Bloody Pat Bamford. And I'm like, well, I can't do it now because everyone's going to think I'm copying Pat now. So I'm stuck with this.
Be your own man.
Me and you should do it, Bridgie. Me and you should do it. Mate, in honour of there, these two.
I've been there and done it, and mine didn't go the same as Chris's. Mine went the same colour as the Leeds United jersey. This one from years ago. I went canary yellow.
I look like colour, does it?
I look like a complete helmet, so I'll never do it again.
No, it suits them too, doesn't it?
It certainly does, and it's been lucky. So obviously back, I'm going to take you, I want to go all the way back to where you started, Christopher, right? And how you ended up becoming a goalkeeper, and what were your early years like? Because I hated playing in goal. I always wanted to be the guy that blasted balls past you guys. And that's why I think the goalkeepers union, what made you get involved in the goalkeeper?
No, I probably started playing football, I don't know, when I was 4 or 5, when I properly got into football. And of course, then everyone's just rotating around and you play goalkeeper or you play striker every other game or on training. And then probably when I was 7, 8, I just found goalkeeping really fun. Like, people probably call me crazy for trying to like jump in front of the ball as a 7-year-old, but I loved it. And it's just been like that since.
There we have it, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. He just loved diving in front of people and stopping 100 mile an hour shots. Maybe because I'm crazy. Yep, you've answered your own question.
It's either goalkeeper or Secret Service. Do you miss a degree of the, I mean, probably not now, obviously, but back then, was there a degree of like, I miss the glory, I wish I was at the other end scoring goals? Or did you get glory and personal achievement from stopping shots?
Of course, I've scored a couple of goals in my career as well as a... Not in my professional career, but as a kid. And I just found it more fun to save goals than score goals, basically. So
wow,
that's how it became. I became a goalie.
Who was your idols growing up?
I've always liked... My probably childhood hero was Peter Cech when I was a kid. And it's been ever since. And then, of course, it's been Peter Cech, Casillas... All of them, like when I was a kid, they were the best in the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, Peter Cech, another crazy guy.
And then Peter Cech looked a bit funny as well with his helmet. So it was just something with him.
But he's gone into ice hockey now, hasn't he?
Yeah. Now we have, I don't know if he wears his helmet underneath his goalie helmet when he plays ice hockey, but that would have been even better.
Have you ever thought of emulating it and wearing one yourself?
Probably when I was a kid, yeah, like 10, 11, trying to be a bit crazy, but I never went through with it, so.
Well, Bridgie in his day, not a bad penalty taker. If you watched Grandstand in black and white, you might have seen it. But he was a decent striker in his time. But, you know, you and Bridgie, you're coming up, you're head-to-head, penalty shootout. 12 yards. What do you try and do to get in his head? Have you got a routine, or are you just thinking about the stats? Like, you know where he goes. You're not bothered about the psychology. You're just going to try and save the shot. What do you do?
It depends a bit on the player, I think. If you know it's a player that's going to take the penalty, that usually gets nervous or stuff like that, you probably try to get a bit more into his head. But I've always been...
Did you get nervous, Bridgie? Were you a nervy player?
No, I'm not nervous. I was a confident. I used to walk up and be pretty confident. I was one of them, Chris. I used to try and wait for the goalkeeper to make the first decision and see which way they went. So I knew the ball was never going to move. And I used to think, right, if they take one step left or right, I'm going the other side. That was my tactic. Failed a couple of times, like, but in the mainstay was not bad.
Yes, I think I would struggle.
How would you deal with that?
I think I would just do my own thing and try to do the best I could to save it and then go out of stats.
Are you a goalkeeper that stands his ground, Chris, on a penalty? Do you stand your ground and hold your ground? Or have you, if you've done the research on the play, are you happy to gamble and go early to one side? Because the ones that caught me out were the ones that stood their ground, because obviously they knew that I was kind of being a little bit of a deviant waiting for them to go first.
No, usually you got all the stats and stuff like that and then you just try to wait it out as long as you can. So usually have players... Even on the stats, they shoot left or right, every other time, and then you're just a bit like, you just have to feel your gut.
I don't want to give too much away about how we plan for games and prep for games and whatnot. But obviously, if it was a cup knockout, so if you know we didn't have FA Cup replays, there was a potential of a shootout. You probably would have done meticulous research on their penalty takers and whatever. But do you still do that for a regular game on the off chance that they get a penalty? Are you still looking at their penalty takers and looking at the stats of which way they like to go?
Yeah, we always go through how they press, how we should play out, stuff like that. And then, of course, we go through penalties as well. So, especially now, it's you never know when you're going to get a penalty against. So you kind of just have to prepare as if they get a penalty every game.
That's a lot of information to keep in your head, isn't it? When all you want to do is just stop shots. I think my brain would explode.
But I know one thing. I bet you fancy yourself as a good penalty taker as well, because I know every goalkeeper at every club I've been at says that they are the best penalty takers. So would you fancy your chances against me?
Yeah. If you were in goal, I reckon I would score quite a few, yeah.
Well, that's the conference. That is the conference of man that's kept two clean sheets right there.
we're gonna let you go in a minute, mate, because I know you've got a lot to do. You just got into work, basically. I just want to ask you a quick question about the relationship with the back four, because obviously it's an absolutely crucial thing, particularly the way that we play. You know, you're effectively an extra centre half who has to play with the ball at his feet, And that relationship between the back four and Ilan has developed, and he feels much more confident with the guys in front of him. Obviously, you not playing, do you still have a good relationship? And obviously, it switched. You had a completely different group of guys in front of you for the cup game. How's your relationship with those outfield players? And was that something that when you realised you had the green light to play, you suddenly sort of they reached out to you and you talked to them more, or are you all as a team already pretty friendly terms?
No, we're usually always friendly. It can go a bit hot in training sometimes, but we're all friends. And yeah, when I came in, I got welcomed in a perfect way. Like, I had Coops and Joe next to me, like as centre backs, and it's been brilliant. Like, they welcomed me onto the pitch perfectly. So.
Oh, right.
I have nothing to complain about like that, no.
Is it quite difficult when the defenders do get changed out for a game? Like, you get comfortable playing with two guys at your centre-backs, and then suddenly the following week you've got different guys there, or are you quite... Does everyone get on well enough that anyone could play there?
Yeah, I would say everyone gets on very well, and of course you change a bit how you play, even with, say, me, Ilan and Carl, we're three probably completely different goalkeepers. So they have to change a bit as well, but we're all, looks like we've done it pretty well, so it's been good.
Certainly can't complain with the performances, that's for sure. I think I'm getting the message that you've got places to be. So I've just got one final question. I don't know if Bridgie's got anything, but I just want to know, what are your hopes for the rest of the season? And I don't just mean Leeds United. I mean, you know, obviously promotion, etc. But for you personally, what are your goals for this season?
Just now to push as hard as I can. And then until Carl comes back, push Ilan as for him to be the best he can. And for myself to train hard and be the best like I can be at any point and be ready at all time. And then, of course, for the team, it's to get promoted, of course. And then hopefully we will have a good cup run as well. That'll be fun. So that's about it.
That's what I'm looking forward to. A good cup run. That would be tremendous.
Well, I think that if Ilan is coming back in for Cardiff, I fully hope and expect that you're going to be the one on the cup run. That would be excellent from my perspective. I would love to see that very much.
That'll be fun, yeah. And then I'll get some more time. But it's not up to me or any of us. It's up to the boss. So we'll just have to wait and see. And yeah.
Amazing.
Christopher, I wish you all the best for the rest of the season, mate. Lovely to meet you. Keep doing what you're doing, pal, off the field, because it's paying dividends on the field. So keep up that professionalism, mate. And I wish you all the best for 2024.
Thank you very much. A pleasure to be here. And thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure was all ours, mate. And I just want to say personally that I just think that your entire outlook and perspective on football and being a goalkeeper and taking your opportunities, but also being pragmatic. I just think that is really quite inspiring. So well done. Congratulations. And thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. See you guys.
So, I mean, there we are. Christopher Claassen. I mean, Leeds United's third choice goalkeeper, but you wouldn't believe it, would you?
No, not at all. Not after his two performances. And I think that's the hardest thing I would be able to accept as a goalkeeper, is knowing that you are, you know, your second, third choice. So to have that togetherness, like you say, he's accepted it. He said he's had his moments when it's been tough, but he understands that what is his job. And what I admire at the end there, Matt, is he said, you know, my job now is to push Melier as hard as he can so that he can be the best he can be.
Yeah.
That's incredible, mate, like to think about. To have that mindset when you know you've just been basically punted from your position.
Absolutely. I mean, that having that mindset that it's all about the team. Despite that, I think is really quite inspiring. I meant what I said when I said that his pragmatism was quite inspiring, because ultimately, like, he's come into a role where he's saying, no matter how well I play, I could be the best goalkeeper that Ellen Road's seen for 90 minutes, but ultimately I'm still going to get dropped next game. And to still be quite pragmatic and I mean, happy with it. I mean, I just thought that's what you need, isn't it, in a third choice goalkeeper?
Yeah, of course.
It's the mental side.
I think what he'll appreciate at some point, he'll know that he's learning so much off the experience of Darlow. He's probably thinking, well, I've got to learn as much as I can. And there'll be a point where he will become fed up of doing that, and he might take the opportunity here at Leeds, or he might say, you know what, is this time to spread my wings and go somewhere else? I played second fiddle behind Kev Phillips and Niall Quinn, and when Leeds came a calling, I was no way I was staying. You know, I knew my role at Sunderland. I'd get the opportunity. If Kevin was injured, I'd play. If Quinny was injured, Danny Dicci would play. We had the little large situation that the team had, so I knew my role there. It was different when I came to Leeds. I knew I was coming as a starter, basically, because Jimmy Floyd had gone, and I had up my game to keep that. So at some point, he'll know when the time is right for him, whether that's with Leeds or somewhere else. But it was a great chat, and I think the obviously Scandinavians will love listening to that episode from Norway, because he's one of their own.
Absolutely. And speaking of one of their own, one of our own, I just want to say before we leave you all, obviously the news out this week that these words get thrown around a lot, but a genuine legend of the club, an incredible servant, the one and only Bill Luke Ayling, has left to sign for Borough, and I couldn't let this episode go out without mentioning Bill and his incredible time at Leeds. Obviously, we've had him on the show a bunch of times, and talking about one of our own, he really, really is, isn't he? He'll be a big miss around the changing room for sure.
Yeah, he's a big character, and a great character as Luke. He's proven his worth over the years. Part of the team that got Leeds United back to where they belong in the Premier League. I'm a big fan of Luke's. I like him on the field. I like him off the field. And unfortunately, due to circumstances and the new manager, he hasn't got the game time he wants. So you can't begrudge him that. He's done his time. He wants to play. His career's coming to an end. I understand what he's doing. He's going to a team in the same division that'll be pushing Leeds all the way. So he'll be, I want to know if he's going to be cup tied for the League Cup as well, because he's got a chance of playing the semi-final, if not a final, in the League Cup. So I wish him all the best. He's a cracking character, and I'm sure not one Leeds fan would begrudge him this opportunity, so he can go and get some game time. Because I know Middlesbrough with my mate Woodgate is there, one of the ex-Leeds legends, a great defender. I know they're really struggling with injuries and suspensions, so he'll be getting game time, no doubt about it. So we wish him all the best, Matt. I'm gonna miss him off the field.
Yeah, he's a really great bloke. I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago at the Ipswich game, and he knew he wasn't playing, and he was just saying, like, his mood was still, he was still Bill, you know what I mean? He understood his role in the team. He was still laughing and joking and cheering everyone up in the lounge and going around. I mean, he's just such a great, great character, and has done everything and above for the club, and obviously for our promotion push in the Premier League. He's just given everything, and a great captain as well. I think that when Coops was out and he stepped up, the lads loved having him leading, and he led from the front. And it does feel like But it's like almost end of an era stuff is when players like Bill leave. I wish him all the best because I think he's still got a lot to offer, and we'll miss him here at Leeds United, won't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, with that, we will leave you guys, and hopefully the next time we speak to you, we'll away at Cardiff. Bogey team, innit? What do you think?
I don't even go there. I don't want to put a downer on it. We've had a great interview. We've talked about Patty Bamford's goal. We've talked about clean sheets, right? It's 2024. You've just gone straight away. Cardiff bogey team. Not going there, listeners. I want to say to everybody, enjoy the moment. We will win this game, and all the best for everybody in 2024. From me, the upbeat one of the duo, and from Matt... What you got to say, lad?
And we'll see you next week with 3 more points on the tally. Absolutely, we will.
Wow, he's a changed man in 2024.
Right, guys, take care. See you later. Bill, we love you.
My ears were killing us halfway through that, and I realised I had my new AirPods in the wrong ear, and I've had to change them towards the end there. And now they're sitting absolutely lovely.
Now they're snug.